Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm privileged to have a very, very accomplished person who is pursuing his passion. Pavan Gupta, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Pavan is from IIT Delhi. He spent a little time in his family business and then decided that he wanted to go to the mountains to pursue Buddhism and the Jungian philosophy. He has opened 35 education centers and is the author of 5 books. Pavan, what would you say are 3 key milestones in your career or life?
The first one was Vipassana, definitely. Because, you know, doing Vipassana, the first Shivir, which was in 84, I was doing business till then, and I was not happy about it. I mean, in the sense, I realized very soon that my temperament was not suited to business environment that existed in the country or even otherwise. And but, you know, there's a certain safety in doing something which you are familiar with. Right. And there's insecurity in leaving it. And when you, especially when you don't know what exactly you want to do. Mm-hmm. So doing that first Shivir in 84 gave me the courage and somehow gave me the, you know, my insecurity vanished, mm-hmm. at least for a while. And I was able to take the step of jumping into and exploring unknown territories.
Perfect.
So I think certainly that was one. The second was, I would say, you know, after I came to Mussoorie and it just so happened that these schools got started. I'm saying that very consciously because I came here with a different purpose in mind. I came here to pursue my Vipassana sadhana, mm-hmm. and, you know, go deeper into Buddhism and, correlate it with Jungian psychology, which I had started reading a few years earlier. And, you know, while I was here, I used to visit me and my wife used to go to the surrounding villages just out of curiosity. You know, we were in love with the villages, the architecture, and there was a romance there too. So, you know, after you visited the place 5-6 times, then people come to know it's a small place. These villages are extremely small. So people started asking us, what do you do? And when they realize I'm not doing, you know, within inverted commas, anything, then they said, why don't you teach our children? Wonderful. You know, they have nowhere to go and they have no school nearby.
So we said, so I'm going to come to your education centers.
Yeah.
But what was your third milestone?
So the second milestone was when they raised certain questions about education.
Okay.
And then in that process, I got introduced to a gentleman who has really molded my perception in a major way. That was meeting Dharampal. He's no more. He passed away in 2006. Mm-hmm. He was not a formal trained historian, but he's done seminal work in understanding what India was like just before the British arrived and how things changed after that. So that was the second milestone. And the third milestone was meeting another great gentleman called Agrahar Nagaraj, who used to live in Amarkantak. He is also not there anymore. So these are the 3 milestones.
So, you know, when we before the show, when you and I were talking,
yeah,
you told me that, you know, you left your business to pursue Buddhism in the Jungian philosophy. What made you take this decision? I mean, it's a very, very difficult and a courageous decision to take. And as you just mentioned, throw it all away and start life afresh. And you must have been very young.
Yeah, I was. I mean, you know, I came out of fight. See, I'll be very honest. I don't like pretending and I like to be straight. So when I even going to IIT was not a very, what should I say, out of a great deep conviction or anything. Mm-hmm. I happened to clear the exams. I didn't go to any coaching center. They didn't exist at that time, at least in Calcutta where I used to live. I just happened to clear them and, you know, some kind of a pressure started building after that. Then people started assuming that once you have cleared, you will certainly go there. And I had no other ideas. So I said, okay, fine. And there was a certain prestige involved. So that also works at the back, you know. that yes, entering. And so I went there and I spent 5 years over there. When I came out again, the same question struck me, what to do? And then my family, my father and my uncles, they suggested that, look, we have some business in Bihar and why don't you do something in alignment with that?
Right.
So I started the solvent extraction plant. I was quite happy, well, okay, while it was being set up. But once the business really started, the factory started running, I realized that I was not cut out for this. You know, the whole dealing with the government officials, various departments, the banking system, the customers, everywhere, it requires that you be a little different from who you are.
Correct.
You know, I'm not calling it some kind of a dishonesty, but yeah, there is some pretension involved, some kind of a drama involved, some kind of a marketing involved, and that didn't go with my own, you know, the way I am.
Correct.
And this was increasing, I mean, this discomfort. And then it just so happened that I had, at that time, I had started reading Alan Watts and D.T. Suzuki, two authors. They didn't make complete sense to me, but they made some sense to me. Something told me that these guys are saying something very deep, and you know, something started resonating. And just then a friend of mine came and told me about Vipassana. And when he was telling me, I asked him probing questions, and what he told me is kind of resonated with what Suzuki and Alan Watts were saying. You know, so I said, oh, then he said that, yes, the traditions of Vipassana are from Buddhist tradition, and Suzuki and Alan Watts were also talking of Zen Buddhism. So that I found some connection there. And I said, okay. And then I was very suspicious of all these things, you know, anything to do with spirituality or religion. I clubbed the two together at that time, not anymore. And I felt that they not usually are a racket. Some guru must be there asking for money, making, you know, chelas and all that. So, but then he assured me that it was very clean and the setup was clean and there was no guru dumb over there. So I said, okay, in my mind, I thought I'll give it a shot someday. Within 7 days, I was told that there is a camp happening in Calcutta, bang opposite my house, bang opposite my house. I said, this has come to me, so I must go. And I went and joined it. 10 days, nothing happened. 10th day, something dramatic happened. You know, I felt there was no conflict in the world. Everything was, you know, resonating with everything else. Everything was connected, interconnected. And whatever I had read by then, you know, whether I had read a bit of Arthur Koestler, I had read Lohia, I had read these Suzuki and Alan Watts and other stuff, you know. And it seemed to all come together somehow. It was a feeling rather than an intellectual kind of understanding. It was just a very strong feeling that it's all together. And I started crying, you know. I didn't even know I was crying. Tears started rolling. It was a very, very powerful moment. And after that, I went home and I said that I'm leaving business. No one, they thought I had gone crazy or I was just joking. But anyway, so then start things. So I said that I'm going to now pursue this. Vipassana, Buddhism, and Jungian psychology, because I felt in that moment that Jungian psychology was what he was saying was somehow very, very close to what Buddha was saying. Of course, not that deep, but there were some connections, and I wanted to explore that.
Fantastic. So, you know, when I was reading about you, I've read that you give talks in the alternative space. Tell me a little more about this.
Okay. See, when I was a novice, I must say, a lot of arrogance, like most people have coming out of IIT, or, you know, when we start feeling we are educated and we are successful and, you know, we've got a name and all that. So, you know, this arrogance is almost, you don't even know that this is so, you know, but the arrogance of the educated, I call it, is huge, you know. So when I started working in the villages, women, after some time, when they became familiar with us, when they started sort of being comfortable with us. They said, ye aap padha likha hamare bachchon ko barbaad kar rahe. And they were not commenting on my school. They were commenting in general on the education system. Ki ye padh likh kar bachche barbaad ho jate hain. Ye na ghar ke rehte hain, na ghaat ke rehte hain. Aur ek aurat ne to usko to ek tarah se main guru hi manta hoon apna. She said, bhai sahab inko hona sikhao. Dikhna dikhana sikhate ho aap log school mein. Dikhna dikhana sikhate ho, hona sikhao. So it, many such things. Then we did a research study and, you know, compiled what these women were saying. And then it's a good book, small book, matter of quality. So what happened when I started seeing the truth in what they were saying, that these boys and girls start having an attitude that we have arrived. We are, you know, they don't know anything, but they think they know a lot. And they think their parents and the village and the elders are all fools because they've never been to school. They do all the work. They know a lot of things, but, you know, this attitude comes. And that makes that alienation starts. They start looking down on whatever is their own, be it their language. You know, in Delhi, it will be Hindi. In my village, it will be Garhwali. That's the only difference. So you start looking down on your language, your clothes, your way of life, your way of eating, food, everything, anything to culturally, if you say that this is what culture represents, then all that is backward. And something unknown, imagined, is developed, which is more westernized, more urbanized, something vague, you know. Language is certainly one of the key things there. Sure. But it's not just language, it's clothes, it's mannerisms, it's many such things. When I started seeing this, I said, this is something terribly wrong here. But I didn't know what to do. You know? And then I met Dharampal. Accidentally. I won't go into that because we don't have so much time. And he introduced, he laughed when I told him, he laughed. He said, have you read Mahatma Gandhi? No one had asked me that question. I thought I knew Mahatma Gandhi, like most Indians, but I had not read him. Some quotations here and there. So he encouraged me to buy the entire works of Mahatma Gandhi, the whole collected writings, 100 volumes. And he suggested a few things that you start with this. And I realized what was the problem. What these women were saying was exactly what Mahatma Gandhi was saying 100 years ago. That this English education, Macaulayan education, has created a huge gap between who we are and the school. So school brings in alienation and inferiority, which is part of that alienation. You start feeling small about yourself. And therefore, you start imitating.
Right.
So this whole equation started. You know, you start feeling alienated from your own without even knowing that it is backward. You start feeling that it is backward. Right. Then you start feeling yourself as inferior, and then you start imitating. Incredible. So that is the time when I went through 180 degrees turn in my views about education, about life, about my people in the villages and us. You know, I started seeing it was painful because all those problems which I could see were there in me too. My father used to wear a dhoti mostly, all the time. Actually, my uncles used to wear trousers and all. And I used to feel, why doesn't he wear a trouser? Now, what's dhoti is far more comfortable attire in India, and he was comfortable with it. Why should I feel like that? Yeah. This was so. So if someone was speaking in English, one would feel better. If someone was speaking in Hindi, one would feel, and someone, I am come from a Marwari family. Someone speaking, oh my God, Marwari is not. So any people younger to me in my own family don't speak Marwari. Now, you see, what is this? Why? You know, we need to question these things. So this, our entire country is suffering from this huge complex, which we camouflage under, you know, nice things that we don't talk about.
Development, education. Yeah.
Ha, ha. So, you know, this, because real strength comes from a real confidence, which is in, you know, it's not that everything that is your own is good. I'm not saying that. But you should be, we talk of rationality. rationality should say that English is a language, Hindi is a language, Marwari is a language, it's a means of communication. So yes, in certain contexts you can speak in English. In other, there's nothing, no inferior, superior here.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, but that's what's happening and we don't talk about it. So it's happening in various aspects. And that is the basically, you know, my great learning from, I attribute it to my village people, actually, yes. And Dharampal and Gandhi.
Terrific. Yeah. So this is an interesting segue into what you're doing in education now.
Right.
You know, given the fact that you've had such a 180 degree turn in the way education should be and English, etc. You went to Mussoorie and, as you were telling me, you just chanced upon a group of people in a village where they said, why don't you teach? And then you said, give me some space. Today, you've built that into 35 centers. Tell me some of your learnings and some of the challenges you faced.
One learning is that our people are caught into two worlds. Mm-hmm. If you ask a simple villager, do you want to send your child to school? Very few will say no. They will say yes. But if you don't ask this question and ask this question in a different way, are you happy with the child going to school? Then they say, no, he's got ruined. He's got spoiled.
Okay.
But most of our research people in India only ask the first question.
Correct.
I'm talking of generically.
Yeah.
They don't ask the other question because the assumption is school is a good thing. It's going to do good. And these people are backward. This assumption is in their mind. So they never ask this question.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, if our people are giving two different answers, they're not fools. They're just caught. There's a certain pressure which is there, which forces them to send their children to school to behave in a certain manner, because this is an invisible pressure which you and I feel when we go to a 5-star hotel. And you suddenly, with a waiter, you start speaking in English. Waiter knows Hindi, you know Hindi, but you speak in English. This is an unsaid pressure there, right? This same pressure is there in the village. The same pressure is there in cities. It's all pervasive. It's not there in America. It's not there in Europe. It's there in India.
Yeah.
This is my learning. Now, how do we get out of this? This is where I'm working. You spoke of alternate space. This is where I'm working. That how to talk about it and to give certain clues on how to come to terms with yourself and feel good about it. There's nothing, you know, this whole paradigm of comparison is the problem.
Correct.
Materialistic paradigm is always based on comparison. So which car do you drive in? Which college have you gone to? Which language do you speak? All these are, you know, there's a hierarchy. So Mercedes or BMW is right at the top, or some other brand, and then others come in. So there's comparison. And these, the ones which are on top, keep changing. They don't remain constant. So today it is one, and tomorrow it will be something else, and third it will be something else. So you are running a race, some which the game is being laid out by someone else. And we are all running that race, not knowing that we are doing that. So
not mean redefining aspirations?
I'm talking of paradigms.
Okay.
I'm saying this comparative paradigm is you are not in control. You talk of freedom, but actually you are not free. You are playing the game which is set by someone else. Where is your freedom? Your only thing is that you have to win this race, and not out of 1,000 people, only 5 will win the race. That race is set like that. So I am talking of an paradigm of paradigms. The paradigm which is intangible, which is non-materialistic, which is invisible, like, for instance, everything that we talk of, Swatantrata, you can't show it. If I say that this person is Swatantra, I'm not talking of freedom because I think the two are different.
Yeah.
If I say this person is Swatantra, how will you copy that person? There's no way you can copy. It's a quality, it's an understanding which the person carries. It is invisible, right? This person is courageous. That is that you know that, but there's no, you can't copy courage, you can't copy integrity, you can't copy honesty, you can't copy any of these things. This is the real paradigm. And then the doing part follows from there.
Very interesting. You know? Very
interesting. I'm talking of the real value. For instance, what is the value of a car? The value of a car is to take you from one place to other place efficiently. Correct. That's period. And now, which car do you use is immaterial.
I agree. I'm in complete agreement with you. Yet the people who are, say, driving the most expensive cars,
yes,
are also in a different paradigm where they're it's the impression or the aura or whatever they want to create about themselves that goes along with the vehicle that they're driving in.
You are right. But when I tell them that this salute that you are getting or this so-called respect that you are getting is, if it's really you are getting it, then get down off the car and walk with me on the road. If you don't get the same respect, that means that respect was the car, not to you.
That I'm in agreement.
But if a Raman Maharshi or a Mahatma Gandhi, you don't bother. That's real respect.
Absolutely.
Or a Krishnamurti.
Absolutely.
So we need to look at that. That's all. We can only show that what is real, what is false, then it's upon the person.
Very well said. So now I've got time to ask you two or three questions personally.
Yeah.
My first question, Pawan, is given the incredible amount of work that you do, where do you draw your inspiration from?
My inspiration comes from my respect for the ordinary Indian. And the injustice which has been done to this country for the last 1,000 years. It makes me angry. I know anger is not a good thing, but it makes me angry. I am pained by that. So this, the injustice which and the false narrative which has been given to us, and we are still falling for it. You know, still we believe the New York Times, still we believe the BBC, still we don't have. I mean, this corona is a great example. People are believing and they say we are rational beings. I want to say believe for whatever, but tell yourself that I'm believing. Don't remain in the illusion that you are a thinking person, that you are a rational person. You have no rationality. You are believing. Your source of information is all that you are looking for, but it's still information. It's not knowledge. So my inspiration comes from the injustice done to my ordinary man, for whom I have great respect because he has far more value systems than we have, the educated. We lie at the drop of a hat and we don't even know we are lying. Look at our biodatas.
Yeah.
Look at young people who are looking for a job in a corporate world. Look at that bio. You know it very well. What they don't even consider to be a lie. Marketing people don't even consider that this is a lie, right? But a man on the street, well, he also lies, but he has a tinge of guilt somewhere, you know? He helps his brother when he's in trouble without blinking an eye. We will do all kinds of calculation before we help the other. So values he has far more. He doesn't talk about it. We talk about it. So the injustice to him and the 1,000 years of slavery, torture, pain, inferiority, violence, that has done this to our character, and I'm pained. This is my inspiration.
Very nice. My last question to you. What does success mean to Pawan?
Sahajta. You know, Sahajta, let me explain. Main jo hoon, you know, main waisa dikhun. Aur mujhe koi discomfort na ho. I'm comfortable in my skin. I'm comfortable in myself. 24/7. Then I'll be the happiest person, I feel. That's my idea of success.
So, let me just continue this for another minute. Does Sahajta come with age and maturity, or does it happen earlier as well?
It can happen anytime if you pay attention to what is. When you pay attention to what is, you realize your beingness.
Correct.
We are human being, no?
Yeah.
We are not animals. So this beingness, which is common between you, me, and Donald Trump and Ismana bin Laden or anyone,
yeah,
what is that common element between us? If I realize that, and that is all intangible. Mm-hmm. Your nose is different from my nose. Your eyes are different from my eyes. But that is common. And I, that is beautiful. And if I focus my attention there and do my doing, my appearance comes out of that. It's sahajta, that is spontaneity. That's what it is.
Fantastic. Pavan, thank you so much. I'm definitely going to come and spend some time with you in Missouri.
Yes, most welcome. Come and stay with me.
Yeah, and thank you so much. Huh. And come and see all the great work that you're doing. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Namaskar.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.